This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, CliffCentral.com, on a Thursday on the 7th of March. Pumi is so into this, she's standing up like R. Kelly at a
Gayle
interview, yeah.
Gayle King interview.
Look at you. You're standing up and shy. Did you see the rest of that thing? See, and Pumi were talking about it now. Holy shit. Yeah. Seeing is believing. Like, this guy is totally deranged.
Oh.
Mm. Who was it in an interview who was like, "You don't understand me," some while ago? And I thought, well, that's a person who's unhinged and has no way of understanding that you're in front of the cameras. There was somebody recently who was interviewed, and because these days we have a billion psychoanalysts all trying to figure out what's going on, what's underlying the reactions. You know, I was listening to an interview Joe Rogan did with Dr. Phil the other day about the giveaways. It could have been the Jussie Smollett interview, in fact. And Dr. Phil was saying, you know, when people use certain words and they say, "Let me be honest with you," what they're really saying is, "Up to now, I haven't. So I'm about to tell you a lie that's going to confuse you even more." But
yeah,
it's all part of my survival.
People say, "But."
But.
What does "but" say?
Well,
everything I've just told you, forget about it.
Yeah.
Everything I've just told you, forget about it. Now I'm going to tell you what I really think.
Oh, no.
But people say these things.
Oh, no.
And obviously there's body language. And so they're all dismantling R. Kelly now from every angle. And there's just nowhere for this guy to hide. I mean, he would have been better off not doing this interview at all. In fact,
the truth is, why are we giving him an interview?
I think people are fascinated. It's the same as if Michael Jackson were around now to respond to what Oprah's put in this documentary of hers. I reckon it would get the biggest ratings. I mean, R. Kelly's like a third-tier guy now. But Michael Jackson, I mean, we're dismantling a hero here to some people. And you know, this is an interesting discussion that I heard the other day from someone who's much more wise on these matters than I am about the halo effect. You know what the halo effect is, right?
I've heard of it. I don't really know what it is.
The halo effect is where if someone is good at one thing, we start to ascribe superpowers to them in all things. So we start to believe that they're morally good. We start to believe that they know about how to manage money. They know how to make law. We imagine that they'd know how to raise their kids properly. Now, the truth is, just because you're good at one thing doesn't mean you're good at anything else. In fact, there are very, very few people in the world who can say they tick all those boxes. Mm. You seldom find an athlete who's also good at managing their money, who's also a really good orator, who's also a really good academic, who's also a very good strategist. Sometimes you just get the one or the two things. If you're really lucky, you might have three, but no human being is good at everything, right? And we look at Michael Jackson and we listen to some of his songs and we go, "What an absolute talent. What a genius."
I read this article a couple of days ago. Also, it was about Michael Jackson. And it was largely about kind of people who, like Sia, weren't there in the 80s and the 90s, right? Early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Don't actually understand
what a phenomenon he was.
How huge.
He was a cultural artifact.
This guy, so if you think about the fact that this guy for 50 years was consistently making amazing music.
Oh yeah.
Was changing. I mean, Michael Jackson brought the music industry out of a recession.
That's right.
Out of a recession. And the entire industry.
That's right. Thriller was the biggest selling album of all time. And when it broke those records, people didn't know that you could sell that much music. Thriller. When he first moonwalk on TV, remember he'd just come out of the Jackson 5. He'd been a little bit quiet.
It was at Motown 50th anniversary.
Yes.
And he starts off by saying, "Well, I loved being in the Jackson 5 with my brothers, but now I want to do some things of my own." And he does that moonwalk for the first time. And that crowd, it's like you sent an electric shock through them and then through the world. Because remember, in those days, we didn't have a million channels you could watch. That thing went viral.
It properly went viral.
But it didn't go viral in terms of people forwarding stuff and saying, "Hey, look at this." People were describing it. People were trying to redo it. People were dressing like him.
People are still trying to redo it.
Oh, yeah.
Some dismally.
But,
so.
I mean, Michael Jackson made that halftime show, that Super Bowl halftime show.
Correct.
He made it a thing.
Right.
That performance of his, it was like 1993, right?
I have goosebumps 12 minutes just thinking of like about it.
Michael Jackson going ham.
Well, I have goosebumps just thinking about it because I've seen the director of that halftime show do an interview around the experience of having Michael perform at the halftime show. It was probably 2 days before the show, and Michael calls at like 3 a.m., tells this guy, look, you aren't going to tell me when to start. You are going to wait up until you get my cue, and that's when the music rolls, and that's when the show starts.
And then he spent 2 minutes standing dead still on the stage. It was just like, everyone's just losing their
minds. It's like this big fat dude who was like director screaming into Michael's ears through the comms, just going, Michael, start, because he's looking at the clock and we're pressed for time.
So what's Tommy saying?
How powerful this guy was.
So I think Sia does have some understanding of this, because I think this is, he in his music transcends generations, right?
He wrote Heal the
World. And ironically, in his sexual behavior, he transcended generations too, but we'll get into that in a second. So what we're seeing here is this halo effect. And I've always been a massive Michael Jackson fan, and I've made off-color jokes about how, you know, to have kept him alive, we should have given him whatever he wanted, and we would have got more great songs. Because I have such a love for that kind of talent. It's deep-seated, and I'm in awe of it. But here we're watching what most people don't feel comfortable with. And there may be other people in your life who you felt you wanted to put in a certain category. Like, because we all are prone to do this. It's a human thing. Mm-hmm. We start to attribute special powers, special place, an invulnerable kind of shell of, what would you call it, almost sanctity around a certain person or a certain event. Or we create these ideas that we wall off and we say, well, that's sacred. That is special to me. I'm not going to let people say anything. It's going to be a personal insult to me if we take down Michael Jackson. And the truth is that it is emerging. And it's interesting that someone like Oprah Winfrey had to do it, because she really said, you know what? And I looked carefully at what she'd actually done in terms of the scripting for this. She said, this doesn't take away from what a brilliant guy he was. But what we have to realize is that sometimes really, really bad people can do amazing things, and really, really good people can do really bad things.
So I think the one thing, or the one person that almost universally becomes that kind of, is a mother. We feel like that about our moms. No matter how, like...
Yeah, they're sacred, right?
We feel that way about our moms. And even as we grow older, you retrofit some of the things that you may not quite remember, whatever. It's so hard to kind of be like, always mad at your mom. Or make the decision that maybe she wasn't all that amazing. Maybe she wasn't good.
Yeah.
Maybe she, you know what I'm saying?
Well, R. Kelly, for example, is obsessed with his mother.
Well, you know, obsessed
enough. And there's a danger there too, that your mother can become some kind of archetype for you. And maybe she's the wrong sort of archetype, and it can completely poison your idea of what womanhood is, what a relationship should be like. Mm. And for a lot of people in South Africa who are raised by single mothers, they either make them heroes or they make them devils. Mm. And they're neither of those things. They're just trying to cope with whatever
they've
got. They're
just people. You
know? Yeah.
Like trying to figure it all out.
That's so interesting, though, that you bring it home with you when you talk about a mother, because everyone can relate to that in some way. Mm. Whereas, you know, I know a lot of people who just don't like Michael Jackson. I do not understand that at all, because... When you hear that beat on Billie Jean, or when you hear him singing Man in the Mirror. Yeah, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. And he does that, at the beginning. Mm. I mean, it's gonna be hard to watch him become this vilified character. Because that's going to happen now. Because now we do revisionist history on him, you see. Mm. And now suddenly the guy who... really single-handedly changed the face of music, the king of pop, and for a long time he was inviolate. You couldn't say anything about him, because remember, he would pay off the kid, or he would try to protect his own reputation. He's gone now. He can do nothing.
And
his family are trying. They're scrambling to kind of hold it together. But this thing, this documentary,
although I
Oprah's,
must say, that is the thing that irritates me the most.
What?
About this, what? Right? Is that he's gone now.
There we go. Exactly what I was going to bring up there.
He's gone now. There's no going back. There's no, you know what I'm saying? There's no opening it up. There's just now there is a particular conversation that is being had. It's like gossip. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you think it's fair?
Yeah. It's like when someone's left the room.
It's like gossip. It's like now you're having a conversation about this individual and all of these various things around. And there's,
I've been trying to weigh it out and figure out how I feel about it. Do you think it's fair that these conversations are happening with Michael not being here? He can't stand up for himself. He can't explain.
I think he's relieved.
He can't. He's not here. You know, it's unlike an R. Kelly, even though he might be weepy and angry in an interview, he's able to justify in his own words. But Michael isn't. And so do we take what, even though it's a bunch of people who are saying similar things, do we take that as truth? Or can we use that as proof enough?
I don't know. And it's
join my way.
Very difficult. No, but it's very difficult. It's very difficult, you see, because all of these conversations that have been had over the years, and this is always how I felt about people who then settle quietly off, you know, off the big stage. I'm going, you brought us into this. Can we all can we finish this story together? Can we all be...
You feel like they owe you something.
Damn straight. You brought me into this conversation. I was having my own life over there, right? You brought me into this conversation. And it's not fair to leave me halfway. Now, it's like, you know, when people have a lover's tiff and then you like pick a side?
Mm-hmm. And, yes. At least, what happened?
And then they get it all like... They forgive each other, and then you're left on the outside going.
But that was your fault because you chose sides. Yeah.
But this is but where we are now with the Michael story is there is no side to choose. There is only one side. There is only one side. So even though they script it to say, oh, you know, he's still a good guy. He still made all of this history. He still makes such amazing music, right? Where you actually are is you are at the end of this conversation. Is a conversation that ends with everybody saying, but this guy was a monster.
Okay, but here's the other part of that, and you've led me nicely into it. I was thinking about this last night. Is Michael Jackson just a human who did some evil things, right? Took advantage of children, which we all universally, unless you're a psychopath, you have an aversion to someone doing evil things to children, right? For all the obvious reasons. Is he a person who did evil things, or is he sick? Because there's a huge difference. Remember, if we think that the way that people like Michael Jackson and other people who abuse children behave, if we think that that's an illness, like, for example, depression or the common cold or cancer, you can't hate them for that. But if they're evil, if they're doing evil things, because there's no such thing as an evil person. You know, even Hitler loved his dog and his wife. So there's no such thing as an evil person.
In general.
Sure. Yeah. He was very specific about who he loved, but you know,
he loved.
Ask not to reason why. Yeah. So there's no evil person, but people do evil things, and some people are more predisposed to do evil things than others. And you cannot debate that what Michael did to these children, certainly the ones that we know about, must have been evil. I mean, it's detailed in the documentary. What he did was evil. Take advantage of children. It's duress.
The point is
manipulation.
At this juncture, you cannot psychoanalyze a dead guy.
No. But this is about our attitude going forward. Mm. Are we going to treat people who behave like this as people who are doing evil things, in which case they get punished and go to jail? Mm. Or are we treating them as people who have a sickness, in which case they go for treatment and we can't hate them?
You can still hate them.
Even if they've got a sickness?
You can still hate them.
But that would be like hating someone for having cancer. No, we've got to be clear about this. It's like,
I've never thought of it that way, I have to be honest.
It's really, it's like saying if
Sia is properly thinking about it.
Which one is it?
There's a need for, like, I can actually see the thought bubble next to your face.
I'm trying to figure out if I can differentiate between the, I think the manipulation, the seduction is all part of the illness. So even the lying is part of the illness as well. You can't just say, oh, okay, you've done the act and we'll persecute you on the grounds of it being an illness, but the fact that you make someone feel less than and you work on their emotions, that's also sick and twisted. You can't separate the two. So I don't know. Oh, God.
Yeah, but you see, this is important. Like you, these are things that you have to figure out, because it's about you and how you're going to treat people.
And these are the things that I think the whole of society has to figure out. It's an evolution of how we are with each other.
Because sexual abuse is not just the act.
Of course not.
A lot of it is also, like, I'm not an expert, but I think more of what is detrimental to the victim is the seduction of it all.
Let's go back to the, because you have to make a choice here, and you don't have to do it now, and I'm not going to hold either of you to the fire, but if you're going to say it's a sickness, then we're going to have men who beat their women claiming they've got a sickness. And then we're going to say that serial killers have a sickness, because clearly there's some component of psychopathy here which could be, rolled out into an idea around this could be some sort of mental illness. There's a genetic or a component of this that is biological. And remember, if you go down that road, there's no turning back. If you start saying, well, pedophiles have a sickness, then you can't be putting them in jail anymore.
But Gareth, the whole system of jailing people within itself is, there's a bigger conversation to be had with the whole system. She is going, is this a rabbit hole?
No, you know why?
It's a rabbit hole. No, it seriously is.
I say, oh, geez, because I was thinking of an easier way out. I was thinking, let's just use justice as our equal living.
Never. Because justice is all perspectives. It's all perspectives.
And it's just piles and piles of history being piled on top of each other.
So what it is it is simply... So it's about figuring out how you correct stuff that's outside of the norm. Because the thing about laws and... To your point, Sia, justice is it's about social norms. It's about what is currently acceptable to the largest part of the population. And those things shift.
Of course,
those things change.
I wonder if you did a poll now and you said to people, is child or woman abuse or violence, is it a, because those are very different. All three of them are very different things. But if you said those are manifestations of psychological problems, or they are just evil behavior, because the two are very different things and you have to choose. I wonder what percentage of people would fall on either side.
I think it would be very, depending on who you're asking and at what time. And this is the thing about it, though, is also their own personal experiences, because all of those things come to bear when you make these decisions, right?
Right.
But because that has been one of the things that has been most fascinating to watch over the past week after the whole Babes
Vodumo,
saga.
Yeah,
right?
there's a new chapter to that which is opened up.
So after that entire Babes saga, it's been amazing for me to watch how people are commenting on social media and the way various people who, under normal circumstances, you're kind of going, yeah, this is a rational individual, right? The way that they're looking for ways to justify lots of everything around this situation. And again, I'm like, you brought us into this.
Don't walk out.
Don't leave us here.
We haven't finished.
Don't leave us here. We ain't done.
We got a couple of things that are going to become discussion points for a long time at every drink, dinner, social occasion. Some of them are very serious, like the Michael Jackson or the R. Kelly thing, and the Babes Wodumo thing. Some of them are a little bit more flippant and stupid. But we've got, in every given day, there's going to be this polarization of opinions around things. And what we've got to learn to do, I suppose, is to very rationally, sensibly, and unemotionally deconstruct this stuff and figure out where we actually think we might stand. You know, I raised that transgender couple. Well, it's a lesbian couple, and the one woman decided to
transition
into a man. Now they claim to be a straight couple in love, and this is forcing a lot of people in the LGBTQ community who thought they were all allied to suddenly go, but hang on, is sex something, gender something that is fluid? Is your sexual predisposition, your preference, is that something which is fluid, or are you born this way, like Lady Gaga says? Because you can't have it both ways. This couple have turned their back on the lesbian community to be allies of the trans community now, and they're saying straight love, you know, which, no, this is complicated. This is where we are in the world right now. You got to be very careful where you plant your flag and which flags you're willing to die with. Another one that's coming up, and we'll actually talk to the kid today. You saw that video of what went on at the University of the Free State, where the EFF members are taking the rubbish out of the bin, throwing it on the ground. And then this one kid comes along and he picks up the rubbish and puts it back in. Then the EFF people throw it back on the ground, and he just picks it up and puts it back in.
Mm.
And there's no aggression on either side. It's about the rubbish. But there's a story in that too. And like, where are you planting your flags? Is this about, you know, how, you know, is it a protest? I saw a guy doing mental gymnastics saying, this is a protest that's been interrupted. And then I mean, you know, that's kind of, but you know, there are people who have that opinion. You've got to look at all the opinions. And then there are people saying, well, this kid who was picking up the rubbish is actually doing what a sensible, balanced human being should do in a society they care about. Whereas if you're throwing the stuff down, what is that saying about how you feel about society or yourself? And there are lots of questions that are going to come up about that. So we'll actually speak to the guy who was involved in that incident, which has got huge sharing and traction and virality. And, you know, so I think that could be interesting. And then I've been put in my place by someone who, remember we spoke about the straws the other day?
Yes.
And yesterday,
you were still tweeting about it. What, was it on your Facebook?
It was, yeah, somewhere. So Fern,
I laughed so
Fern
much.
Says to me, that's her name, Fern, as someone who lives at the coast and sees the result of plastic waste on seabirds almost daily, I feel your stance on single-use plastics is ill-informed. By airing your opinion regarding the issue constantly, you're encouraging people to not be conscious about the effects of plastic on the environment. First of all, you attribute way too much power to me. I'm not the kind of audience we've got here. I'm not convincing them of anything, trust me. We all need to take responsibility for reducing our reliance on plastic. Fern, I know this. What I was saying is that's making the tiniest difference, and actually the things that should be making the difference are things that are way beyond our control. And I'm saying that as a pragmatist, not as an environmental evangelist.
But wording is important. I'll say that.
Okay, go on.
I did bring this up yesterday. You said it made no difference at all. And I thought, don't say no. Maybe it doesn't make the biggest amount of difference, but it does make a slight difference.
Well, Fern is hardcore, because Fern says, why do I realize no one can change the world? A combined effort has the potential to do great things.
There we go.
We have lips. Do we really need a straw for a cocktail? Do we need a straw for a smoothie? No. What's wrong with drinking straight from the cup? Oh, please. Listen, Fern, I'm going to argue with you on this. Your smoothie does not just flow well through the lips down your throat. You're going to be messing that shit all over the place. We need a fucking straw, Fern. And if you insist it's got to be paper, then fine. We're neither children nor are we infirm, she says. You poo-poo the use of canvas shopping bags and denigrate those of us who use them. Here's the thing. I have a few canvas bags that have lasted me a good 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're in constant use. Fern, you're right. I'm not arguing with you.
Okay, so what do you admit from yesterday?
I admit that I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I'm not going to be one of those people who says I'm all for the environment and I recycle. I admit I'm careless.
Oh, just your wording, that's all.
Yeah, okay. My wording, so Sia's forcing me to make an apology here. No, yes. So, See us pushing me in the corner. It doesn't make no difference. It makes such a negligible difference as to be almost unobservable from anything but the Hubble telescope.
Thanks. Okay? Because I have a side-by-side story around this as well.
She says, here's the thing. Think of the number of non-biodegradable plastic bags that would have ended up in the landfill. I feel you need to have a constructive debate around the issue and give credence to one and not give credence to just one point of view. You're in contact with the people from Two Oceans Aquarium in Cape Town. How about getting their viewpoints on important matters? Well, Michelle works there. She can message us or call us anytime. I agree. She probably knows more than me. We need to be encouraging people to use less plastic and be responsible for what they do use. I love your show and I've listened from day one. I'm a bit disturbed about your leaning towards Donald Trump because you bring him into every conversation. Had I mentioned Trump before you did, Fern, this morning? Stop it. We don't live in the US. There's no need for sycophancy here. Great team. Glad that Leanne and Pumi are back. Gord's hilarious. Regards, Fern. Okay, good. There we go. So I've read your email, Fern. I've divested myself of any mistakes and broad statements that I made yesterday during the show, which have pissed you off so much. And now we can hopefully move on.
But goes back to your point as well. In these times, let's all be open-minded. Let's all reconsider. Let's all learn.
Are you ready for some news?
Humph.
All right, here's some news. First of all, in Cape Town, the five things you need to know. A former deputy dean of student fees at Stellenbosch will soon appear in court for fraud to the tune of 35 million rand. You know, here we are about fees must fall, but there's someone who's just pocketed 35 million rand.
Yeah.
I mean, how does this even happen? The Hawks last month served this person with a notice to appear in the Bellville Specialized Commercial Crimes Court on March 18th. Hawks Western Cape spokesperson Pilani Nkwalase said, the man faces multiple charges of fraud and one of money laundering. The crime that was committed and the value of the crime is around 35 million. You know, when the guy who handles registration at the university is driving around in a Lamborghini,
shouldn't you go?
Or he goes on five holidays a year that are like to extraordinary places in the world which must cost an arm and a leg. All I'm going to say is two words: lifestyle audit. We should be doing this on each other. I'm not saying spy on your neighbors. But if there's someone who you know is working for the state or working for a university or anything like that, and they have just oodles and oodles of money, there should be some alarm bells.
Yeah, but I'd be that idiot. Best believe if I got 35 million, I won't be driving a Toyota.
Guys, you underestimate these things. I don't think he's probably like driving around in a Lamborghini. He's just living a quiet life away from, you know, that's where he's spending all his money, far away from the students and stuff. Which is why people who defraud companies like that MTN worker for so long, that's why they can keep it for such a long time. Because they're actually quiet about it. They're not, you know, out here pulling a Kanyimbao.
Right.
Sorry, I just can't send through all of the scans of the admission forms. I'm currently in Bora Bora.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry about your university being declined. You wanted to apply for that degree. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's full. From Bora Bora. Okay, in Rustenburg, a much more sad story. A search has been launched for two boys who were allegedly kidnapped while playing at a park in Mahikeng in the northwest. Sergeant Lesedi Dingoko said that the kids were allegedly kidnapped on Tuesday evening. Their names are Onalena Molehabangwe and Khonse Jolo, who were both aged 10, kidnapped by three occupants of a Volkswagen Polo. You know, I know it doesn't happen often. It really doesn't happen often. But it's always so goddamn scary when you imagine what a child must go through when your car pulls up. Strange men get out, they pile the kids into the car, and I mean, the fear, my heart starts beating when I think about it. And then you imagine how the parents are worried about them. The children have not been seen since. They were put in the boot of the vehicle, and the vehicle was driven away.
Heaven.
Yeah, and they've got pictures. Go to News 24 or IOL, and you'll see the story. And if you see kids in those clothes, or you know, if you see a kid who looks like either of these two boys, then please, if you know anything, report that to the police because they're busy launching a manhunt to try and find them. Five people were found dead in a home in Montclair. That's in Durban, right?
Yep, it's in Durban. Oh,
this is scary.
That is a hectic story.
KZN police spokesperson Lieutenant Colonel Tulani Zwane said that all five of the deceased sustained gunshot wounds and died at the scene. He confirmed the police had found a firearm that was at the scene. Details were still sketchy at this point as to how the bodies were discovered, but police are at the scene and the bodies have not been removed yet. It is uncertain when it took place. Close relatives of the deceased who stood outside the premises declined to speak to the media. It's believed that they are, three of them are adults and two are children. Community members have gathered outside the home and they will give us more updates.
They both work for the magistrate's court, and the one is the husband is a court interpreter and the woman is like an administrator.
Oh, no.
And they are children.
Oh no.
And remember,
that was the last thing I saw last night.
Remember last,
it was like still a developing story.
Last week, four people were killed in a shooting in the Durban CBD. It is believed an off-duty Metro cop opened fire in his apartment before turning the gun on himself. Now again, mental illness, sickness, or evil. You know, we've got to figure out our way around these things. It's not getting any easier. And then someone else who I think is definitely a candidate for mental illness, Incredible Happenings Ministries leader Paseka Mboro Motsweneng, yesterday stormed into the premises of Shepherd Bushiri's church. Now, pastor on pastor violence.
Oh.
Seeking a public apology over the 2016 heaven miracle. Now, if you are still looking for an apology for something that happened in 2016, I would say you've got massive, massive psychological problems.
Just a tiny bit.
You need to, and especially if you're earning the kind of money that these pastors are out of bullshitting other people that you can cure just about anything, cure your goddamn self over a problem that you have since 2016. I know people who have arguments in families and don't talk to each other for years.
Dude, people have arguments like that on the golf course and don't talk to each other.
Amazing, right? So on arrival, listen to this. The miracle had been orchestrated by Bushiri's people, according to Mboro, and now he wanted to clear his name. Remember, he, and that's him, it's Bushiri, it's Mboro, and it's Lukao. These are the three pastors of bullshit in South Africa at the moment.
The unholy trinity. There are like so many more.
Okay, well, so many let's more. Just stay at the tip of the iceberg for now. On arrival in Pretoria, Mboro went straight to Bushiri's church, but was instead met by security personnel. They told him Bushiri was not there. In 2016, selfies of Mboro were circulated on social media, claiming he had gone through the gates of heaven on Easter Sunday that year and had taken pictures with Jesus Christ.
Yes, and then his phone was stolen.
Mboro rejected the claim, saying he had not yet died and thus there was no reason for him to have visited heaven. But he's still not saying it's not possible. Yeah. He could walk in there, take pictures with Jesus. I would love to see those pictures. Mm. Did anyone see them?
No. He said his phone was stolen.
Oh, okay.
At a car wash or something.
Okay. All right. Following their public spats, the charismatic prophets decided to bury the hatchet back in those days. Addressing the media yesterday, Mboro reiterated he had not gone there to fight, but wanted Bushiri and him to openly clarify that the heaven pictures were a smear campaign by one of the ECG members.
I think these guys are classic candidates for like good old wisdom that we got like at the kindergarten, like, right?
Yeah.
These guys need to be ignored.
Okay.
We just need to ignore them.
Well, like, we'll start now.
The media needs to ignore them. Like, if nobody was there to ask him, why is he here? What is he doing with cameras or whatever? Just ignore them.
No, like, one would know.
If we all just collectively ignored them,
okay,
I think they would go
away.
You
know what, Pumi? I'm taking your advice. We're moving right on.
I think they would go away. They really would.
Gom artist Bebs Wadumo is facing charges herself of common assault.
Plot twist of note.
The complainant alleges that on Monday evening she attended a gathering at a guest house in Umbilo where she was assaulted by four women, three of whom are known to her, after she got into an argument with one of them. The complainant opened a case of common assault at the Umbilo police station on Tuesday evening. Detectives have been in touch with the accused, who have indicated through their lawyers that they will provide the police with statements. So,
why is this a plot twist? Again, is this linked to the other incident?
No,
so
but
many people who need help.
Like, what is, where does this come from all of a Saturday? And I wonder, is it because the Babes versus Mampintsha thing has caught such huge fire that now this lady wants to also come out and say something?
But why is Pumi saying that we shouldn't be surprised? I mean, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out why it's a plot twist. I think that if they're related, that's interesting. Uh-huh. But either way, and if they're unrelated, I don't know why the one must be like, you know, why no, the one incident yeah. must have a bearing on the other incident. I think that this is clearly a vortex of violence from lots of different angles, right? There's a lot of unhealthy relationships here, and all of them, all of them are equally abhorrent. So it's just as despicable to think that there was this brawl with these five women for whatever reason. For whatever reason, it's just as despicable as the other incident. And if they must be unless they are linked to each other, they must be treated separately.
Right.
And fairly and equally. They must all be tested through the system if that's how that thing works.
But that's how that thing that you
yeah. Look, yeah. I don't know. See, I don't know how.
Ooh, sorry.
Oopsie. I don't know how these matters of assault work in court.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you have to prove something. You have to show. That's why there are all sorts of forms. If you have to go to a hospital, to a doctor, you have to get a form, you have to be examined, you have all of those things. And the way that the system works in South Africa, like, our courts are not courts of justice, they are courts of law. So it's that's why I'm saying I don't know how that thing works. I don't know what happens when you then get there, which is probably why Mampintsha then goes there and opens up his own case.
Well, he's saying
because
now,
that's
yeah. Well, it's also there's also this idea, and R. Kelly personifies this in so many ways, because now he's saying he's the victim.
Yes.
Mampintsha saying he's the victim. This is where, and also the media have got to, like, we've got to ignore pastors who are squabbling with each other. We've got to stop caring about people's hurt feelings in terms of them trying to out-victim each other. If you have beaten someone up, you're not a victim, you're an aggressor. And you can't then allege that you're also a victim afterwards. You can bring your story, go to the court. The court's still the best place, even if it's not always justice, even if it's the law. That's still the best place for us to hear an objective story told by two parties. And that's because humans have figured out that the best way for this to happen is for people to publicly bring their evidence. And there needs to be more evidence than just feelings.
Let's deal with that.
Right.
Yeah. Let's not be distracted.
Then we can figure out all the other stuff.
Don't let the fact that he's now in a moon boot, even though my favorite thing was seeing Mampintsha walk in his moon boot.
But it's like you see.
And he's putting the weight on the wrong foot.
On the foot with the moon boot.
Idiot.
Yeah. So he's clearly a liar. But when are we going to stop allowing people to go for the sympathy? Because it happens in Parliament when Dudu Mieni has to appear before some, you know, commission of inquiry. She always has an illness. She's got a migraine, or she's not feeling well, or whatever. They should go to her house and pull her out of her bed and force her to sit in front of that commission.
Do you know why it's never going to end?
Why?
Because it works.
Yeah, because people. Why? Because we're gullible.
Works.
Same reason we look.
It's not just because we're gullible. It's because we're feeling individuals. Because that's what happens. Is, you know, it overrides. It's like a physiological imperative.
And amygdala response.
That emotional response overrides the sensible response, and that's why it works. It's like, you know.
So Bitcoin, if you care, is $3,901. Ethereum, $104. $140 for Ethereum. So let's get into Said by Sia, Pumi. So raise the emotional stakes this morning, and hopefully Sia has something for us that will make us feel a little bit better, not worse. Take it away, Sia.
Well, I did say I have something related to what we were talking about a little earlier. Use it, don't use it, think about it, don't think about it, but it is around the environment and our use of plastic. You do know Mardi Gras every single year takes place in New Orleans.
Sure, they make those
beads.
It was
2 days ago.
Mm-hmm. Its major trademark are those big beads. It's more than 200 years old, the tradition of? Well, the beads and the fact that everyone throws them around and they're made of plastic ends up generating around 960 tons of trash every single year.
Yep.
And one scientist has been able to go, isn't there a slicker way we can go around this? And is working on making sure that these beads are, at the end of the day, biodegradable and saving tons of trash from landing up in landfills. So he's actually a biologist from Louisiana State University, and he's developed several formulas for biodegradable Mardi Gras beads. And he's already he already has patents pending on some of his designs. So one of his inventions is actually developed a process in which he grows a species of microscopic algae. Doesn't quite sound sexy when you think about it in that way, but nonetheless, yeah. From this algae, he can then harvest and process it into a powder that can then form these beads. And after the fun is had, these can just be thrown away into the soil and they'll break down over a year or two. He says, yes, it is very ambitious. He does believe, though, that we can change and do better. We have great resources to make our Mardi Gras celebrations more sustainable and to protect our environment and health. He has been doing this research for a while, but quite honestly, the one thing that's standing in his way are the high costs of productions and making sure that this happens. But, you know, his patent is still out there, pending, to make sure that the beads are entirely out of microalgae. You know, so I think it's a bit of good news. Let's see. He's on the path. You know, he's trying to change the world in his own way. And will it make a massive... What was your word earlier, Gareth? Will it make a huge change where we can see it from outer space? No. Will it make a slight change? Yes.
All right.
And come on, play the violins with me. All small changes become big changes at the end of the day. Thank you.
All right.
That's your word by Sia for this morning.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sia. All right. So when we come back with Canthan just now, we will get into the burning platform. We're going to talk to the guy at Free State University who was picking up the rubbish. What's your thought on this before we get it? Have you seen the video?
I have seen the video. It's kind of difficult to be on social media and not see some of these things, right? I have seen the video, and when I looked at it, I was just like, oh gosh. You know, there are big problems in our country and on our continent. And I just feel our students and our politics at the moment is so navel-gazing. We're like looking at... the tiny things that are not moving us forward in any way. Not moving us forward in
any
way.
This is like plastic straws.
I wish our kids could be engaged. Our kids, I say, right? Could be engaged in the big battles. I wish they could be engaged in finding the solutions. I don't think... So insourcing of workers is a great short-term solution to our much bigger problem. And our much bigger problem is a huge unemployment rate and an economy that's stagnant. And that for me is what I wish our university students were engaged in experiments, engaged in the thinking exercises of how do we
if you're at lunch between lectures and someone is throwing stuff out of the rubbish bin onto the floor, are you gonna just walk past? I mean, what's the right way to
So I don't think that thing is as simple as it seems. I don't think it's as simple as it seems. And earlier, is it up? Is he on the line?
Yeah, let's talk to the guy.
Hello.
All right, so Eckhart Binding is on the phone. He is. And I'm sure you've seen, just like me, the video of the EFF members who are at the University of the Free State. It's gone viral. He's the guy who's picking up the papers and putting them back in the rubbish bin. So, dude, a lot's happened since you decided to pick up some paper, huh?
Yeah, way too much. It's been really busy.
So what the hell happened? I mean, was it lunchtime at the university? Were you just walking past? How did you get involved in something that everyone in South Africa is talking about?
Well, I was just on my way back from class, just going to my car, business as usual, and there had been a protest movement at the university, and after they had moved through the bridge, they'd caused a little bit of a mess there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get to a point where you don't know what to do, but you want to do something. And then I was just like, you know, let's start cleaning up. Maybe some other students will join. And yeah, that's how I got in that situation.
And what was going on? Because I didn't hear the sound from the video. All I could see was the pictures. Was there any kind of aggression from you or from these two EFF supporters that I saw in the video or anyone around you guys?
In terms of physical aggression, there wasn't really much of that. But in terms of, you know, the atmosphere around you, that was very tense.
Yeah.
I mean, as you can imagine.
Eckhart, just tell me, why not just, because a lot of people, I know lots of people like this, and I might have been one of them too, would have just ignored this. I mean, when I was at varsity, there were people who were setting stuff on fire once or twice during my 4 years there, and I just stayed away from it. What is it that gets some of us involved and some of us not, in your opinion? And what happened with you? Was it just honestly, I'm going to tidy up? I'm curious.
Yeah, you know, I really get it. I feel that I get affected a lot by these type of things, especially because you are in this whole environment where this happens often. So then I just decided, you know, it's not to prove a point. It's not to be a hero or anything. It's just to make campus a better place. And maybe some of the good students can start leveling out with some of the students who don't treat the place as it should be treated.
You didn't know you were being filmed, or you did?
No. I am well aware that I was filmed. There are literally hundreds of the videos that were recorded.
Oh, right.
Which is actually the ironic thing, considering that there's only one video that has been surfaced.
Yeah. Oh, so there are probably other versions of the video too. But you know what happens in these things is that you inadvertently find yourself now in the middle of a national conversation. How do you feel about that?
It was fine at first, and today I'm going to, after this phone call, then I'm going to hand my phone over to my dad, and then I just have to prepare for an exam I have this afternoon, because it's been quite rough on the academics.
What are you writing?
I'm writing tax.
Jeez. Well, that's ironic, because, I mean, the tax on what it costs for government to clean up after us is probably enormous. So tell me quickly, the EFF members, you don't know them personally. Have you had any dealings with them since?
Mm, not at all. You know, I didn't know any of them before the time. And I haven't been personally contacted by any of them after the event. So no news is good news in my world.
And has any good come of this from the event?
Oh yeah, quite a lot. It's actually been the support and the feedback has been overwhelmingly good. Lots of people who wanted to donate, lots of people who wanted to get involved as volunteers, and yeah, basically just that on our Facebook page.
Yeah, I know lots of politicians have been trying to do cleanups, like the president of Rwanda has in his country every other day, and you've got it right. You've got it right in a way that they wish they could. There's a guy called Osman Ibrahim who was so inspired by what he saw that he's offered you a bursary.
Yeah. I have since contacted him. He told me that it was one of his friends whose business would sponsor the bursary. But I haven't had too much feedback yet afterwards. But I believe it's just taking time because it's a process.
All right, man. No ambitions to go into politics, huh?
I always said I don't want to be in politics, but I'd end up there anyways. So I reckon that's going to be how it is. I think if I can make a positive impact in this area of my life, then why not?
And that would start with student politics, which is a very, very messy place to begin.
It definitely is. It definitely is.
All right, dude. Well, I mean, for what it's worth, it's nice to see someone cleaning up instead of messing up. And I think that there probably are lots and lots of people who will be talking about this from either angle. And it'll be interesting to see South Africans debate it. Anyway, good luck to you, man. Thank you.
Definitely. Thanks, right, Gareth. Have a wonderful day. Cheers.
Thanks, bro. That's Eckhart Binding. He is at Free State University. He's the guy who's picking up the papers. So, you know, like Sia says, we've got to use the plastic straws less, and we should use the plastic bags less. We should pick up more. And every little bit does count. And before we can get into the big discussions, maybe we have to start with the little ones. I've already said to Fern, who emailed us, that she was right. So now I've got to admit that Eckhart's right as well. In keeping with all of this, I was on the make a mess side up to this morning, and now I've had to eat the humble pie and acknowledge that I am on the clean up side if I want to make a difference. What's going on here? Canton's handing over money to Sia. Why are you paying Sia?
Is this a pie?
Well, I want to see Sia turn the small change into big change by the end of the day.
The shade of it all. He literally gave me 30 cents.
Oh, my God. All right. Bye. All right. Well, we're going to start with the burning platform shortly. Stick around for that. It's always fun. And with Pumi and Canton, it's never dull. So this morning's burning platform brought to you by Nando's Next.
This is CliffCentral.com.